I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to explore the controversy at the Indiana Department of Child Services. At the end of last year, the head of DCS, Mary Beth Bonaventura, resigned abruptly. In her resignation letter, Bonaventura said budget cuts, confused lines of command, and other forms of mismanagement were putting Hoosier children at risk, even of death. My guests include Indiana lawmakers from both parties and other officials who work with DCS at all points in the system. If you would like to join this important conversation, please call 866-476-3881, email nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin Hello. College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. Hello. We're going to be talking today about the controversy in Indiana's Department of Child Services in the wake of former director Mary Beth Bonaventura's letter to the governor saying that some children may die if the system is not changed or fixed. This is an important conversation. We invite you to join it by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Sharon Pierce. She is president and CEO of The Villages. Juvenile Court Judge Marilyn Moores. Indiana Senator Tim Lannan, Democrat from Anderson. Senator Travis Holdman, who is a Republican from Markle, and Representative Ed Delaney, who is a Democrat from Indianapolis. Welcome to all of you.
How do you do?
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
It's good to have all of you here. I should say at the outset of this, several of our guests have to leave because there are legislative hearings and other business of the state that has to take place today. So I'm going to pitch the conversation to them. I also want to emphasize, so that we could get as many voices heard in this important conversation as possible, we issued invitations far and wide. If there are people who say, who want to call in and ask why so-and-so isn't on, I can assure you someone from that office did in fact get an invitation and either could not make the schedule work or chose not to attend. I'm going to start, I think, in looking at the flow chart here. Senator Lannan and Senator Holdman are the first two who have to leave the conversation. I guess I would start. What was your reaction, or what do you think are the takeaways from Mary Beth Bonaventura's resignation and the letter that accompanied it? I'll start with Senator Lannan on that.
Okay, thank you, John.
Certainly.
Well, the letter and her resignation, I think, quite frankly, I can't describe it other than being shocking. I was totally surprised because the director's reputation had been, I don't think I'm exaggerating when I say it was sterling, and certainly no one doubted her commitment to protecting children. So the message that she contained within her letter when she resigned, it really did come. It was startling, and it continues to be startling. And it has to be taken seriously, and there needs to be quick action, and there needs to be an assurance to the people of the state of Indiana that this matter is going to be resolved, and that we are finding answers to the things that she brought up. So I was quite alarmed by it.
And for the relative few people out there who probably have not read the letter, since it did land a little bit like a bomb at the end of last year, her main complaints were, one, she'd been stripped of authority by chief of staff, that the budgeting wasn't sufficient, that relationships with providers who had served children and had served the department for many years were being strained, and that to some degree the communications infrastructure and all of that was on the verge of collapsing. Senator Holdman, what was your response when you saw the letter?
Well, I was surprised at the letter, to be quite honest with you. I have what I consider to be a good relationship with the former director. Worked very closely with her. Senator Lannan and I both were on the Commission for Improving the Status of Children, taking a very active role, he and I together, to try to resolve some of the issues that plague our foster care system, our DCS system in the state of Indiana. And I actually met with her the day following when the letter was made public. She regretted that the letter was made public. She said that was not her intent that be done. And I think, I don't want to speak for her, but I think there was some regret in the fact of what was said in the letter. Had she known it was going to be a public matter, I think she just needed to have a discussion between she and the governor to address that issue. I started my professional career after a short stint on the mission field for 2 years in Haiti. When my wife and I came back home, I started my professional career as a caseworker, working in what was then what is now the DCS office in my county, and eventually became the county director for 11 years. And I think Senator Long has said it well, our President Pro Tem, that this has been an issue that has plagued this agency for more than 20, 25 years. And to be honest with you, I think it's been closer to 40 years that this has been an issue, because the issues are just so dynamic, so disruptive to families and to children and to communities that are the victims of abuse and neglect. And it's just a tough, tough environment that we ask family case managers to work in, foster parents, residential care providers, therapists, all of the folks that are part of that process, and including all of the judges that have jurisdiction in those cases. There are so many players that are involved. And I had a meeting yesterday with the new director, and I think she's going to approach this from more of a holistic approach than perhaps that we've viewed in the past. And I applaud what the governor has done to reach out to the Casey Foundation and the Child Welfare Policy and Practice Group that's going to be taking a look at what's going on in Indiana and try to get their arms around the issues. We're doing things pretty much the same as we've done since 1975 when I became a part of the system. And not a whole lot has changed as far as process is concerned, but I think just the fact that we've gone through so much of a cultural change in 40 years, and in light of the opioid epidemic, for which is said to be a large part of why we've had such a dynamic increase in CHINs cases, children in need of services, over the last few years, that we're in a different world than we were before in how we operate the department.
I know that, and I want to ask the patience of our other guests. We're going to lose Senator Lannon and Senator Holdman first, so I'm going to direct questions to them initially. I promise everyone will be heard, though. On this, Senator Lannon, what is the legislature's role in this? Because there has been some confusion about that. To some degree, as it is, whenever there is bad news, the various branches of government tend to toss it back and forth like a hot potato.
Right.
In this case, what role do you see for the legislature?
Well, I think our primary role is to make sure that we have policies and funding that are in place that ensure children are protected in the state of Indiana. Now, in the past, that's meant that not only do we carefully take a look at the funding for the department, we've also set caseload standards that are in statute as to the number of cases that caseworkers are supposed to have. And, you know, routinely, unfortunately, the department, and I don't know about 40 years, but I know that for a number of years under at least the last couple of administrations, they have not abided by those ratios. And so if you know, the last thing that we should have had happen here is what Judge Bonaventura pointed out and was complaining about in her letter, and that was that her funding was cut by the administration. You know, staffing was capped, and she was denied the the funding that she really was requesting to get this job done. So as a legislature, I think we have a duty to insist that we don't scrimp when it comes to, you know, making sure our children are protected. And so I think we have a duty and a responsibility that before we leave this session, that we have a comfort level that the department is going to be able to operate efficiently and in a manner that it should to make sure that children are protected. And the thing that really got me in the letter, and I know she may not have known or intended that that be released, but I take it at face value that her claims were valid claims and claims that she strongly felt about. And the most concerning was that she felt that her hands were being tied from being able to do the job that she is supposed to be doing, which is to protect children. And as a legislature, we just simply cannot have that. We have to make sure that the policies are in place, the funding is in place, and that the ability is there to for those policies and that funding to be executed in a fashion that children are protected. So I just feel like that is our duty. I've called for legislative hearings to make sure that's occurred. You know, the governor said he's now willing to give us a couple of reports before we get out of session in mid-March. I hope that's enough. I just am, you know, and I don't think when it comes to our children that we can be guessing that we've got things in place. I think we need to have a level of confidence that we're moving in the right direction. I don't expect everything to be done between now and March 14th. I know it's a heavy lift, but it surely is now the time for us to make sure that we're moving in the right direction to correct these problems.
Senator Holdman, same question to you. What role do you see the General Assembly playing in this?
Well, I think just what we're doing, we're staying on top of the issue and being diligent. We have requested from the governor that he keep us up to date, and he has agreed to, as soon as they get updates and reports from the Child Welfare Policy and Practice Group, that they will notify the legislature. I think it's going to come to Senator Lannon and others through Legislative Council, which is the leadership in both chambers, both parties, and we continue just to be diligent to respond as quickly as we can. And as Senator Lannon said, it's not going to move as fast as any of us want it to, because as I said earlier, I think there are some systemic issues that have got to be resolved, and any reorganization is not going to happen overnight. And I think folks just need to be patient and take the governor at his word at what he said the other night in the State of the State, that there's nobody that cares more for kids in the Hoosier State than the governor of the state of Indiana. And I think he's taken the right step. He moved very quickly to do what he did, and I applaud him. I applaud him for that. But the legislature does have a role to stay on top of this and not to let it get off our radar, and I can guarantee you that is not going to happen. We have a number of senators in our caucus that have made this a priority, and Senator Houchin has been asked by the pro tem for our caucus to be the point person to stay on top of this. And she would have been on this call today, but she's one of those that's in a hearing presenting a bill right now as we speak, so it got punted to me.
Well, and speaking of that, I know Senator Lannon, Senator Holdman, that you both have other commitments. We greatly appreciate you taking the time to talk with us now. I'm sure this is not going to be the last time we talk about it. We hope you will come back again in the future
okay.
to discuss this.
I'll be glad to.
Thank
well,
you.
Thank you. It's an important issue, John, so thank you so much for the opportunity.
Certainly. Thank you for making the time.
Thank you, John.
Certainly.
Thank you.
Sure. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Representative Delaney, part of the issue often with children is that by definition, they're somewhat powerless. I mean, they don't have the vote. They don't have many of the ways that other people can access the system. And in this case, since we're talking about children who are in need in various ways, is that problem even greater?
By definition, the problem is greater. This is our greatest responsibility. And although I'm happy that the governor has said, and I believe him, that he cares deeply about children, there's 150 people in the General Assembly who are supposed to care about children. And we passed a statute during one of the last crises at DCS that said, here's the caseload. And the caseload has exceeded repeatedly. And the courts have said that the courts can't fix it. So it's our job to fix it. That decision came down, I think, in August. So since August, we've been on notice that if this thing's going to be fixed, we need to do it. We're not introducing bills. The majority's not putting in any bills to fix it. They don't want to have any hearings. I've got an intern that I've got working full-time on DCS. I'm going to come out with my own report about what's wrong with that department and that agency. And I think this is a very serious. And by the way, focusing on the children and their families is important, but let's not forget what happens to the criminal justice system, the employers, and on. This is the most sensitive part of the opioid crisis is the children.
Well,
that's not the whole crisis.
And that pivots, and I want to bring Judge Moores in on this too. Judge Moores, you said in one of the news stories that the system is drowning. What did you mean by that?
I mean we're drowning. I mean I have gone from having 2,500 children in care to 5,500 children in care in 3 years. And there was almost no warning that there was going to be this tsunami of children coming into the system. It was like there was a trickle of opiate cases. And then suddenly it was like someone exploded the Hoover Dam. We are drowning. And I don't mean just Marion County. I talked to my fellow judges all around the state. I was with them yesterday for the state of the judiciary. And it is just almost an impossible caseload. And I don't see children who have been removed unnecessarily. I wouldn't be shy about using the authority that judges are vested with regard to these cases, if I thought that were the case. And so these comparisons to Illinois or Ohio, who have greater numbers of larger populations but fewer children in care, in Illinois, the entire responsibility for child welfare is vested with the executive branch. Well, those are the people who are also charged with only spending within a certain limit. And they're not interested necessarily in expanding the system. But I can tell you that we do not have children in this system who should not be. We have all across the state implemented programs to divert even cases that used to be considered worthy of court attention to other resolutions so that we can focus on these opiate cases. It's a nightmare.
From where you sit, Judge Moores, and I'm going to come back to Representative Delaney too in just a second, are there changes, is there any form of triage that could be done right now to manage the problem? Well, it sounds like what I'm hearing is that there's some fairly systemic change that needs to be made here.
That there's a systemic problem. What is that systemic problem? What are we talking about? I don't know what they're talking about when they say that. We are diverting whatever children we can. We have all, in all of the 92 counties, looked at ways to ensure that only the most serious cases are in court. And still, we have this explosion.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know who is. You can't simply look at the situations in other states. I don't know that we're comparing apples to apples.
Mm-hmm. Representative Delaney, how much of this, Judge Moores referred to you know, some of the budget pressures and all of that, the desire basically to try to save money here, and in this case, save money, it sounds like, at the expense of children. How much of that is at play in creating this problem?
But that's a major part. We manage by surplus. We have the most unusual financial structure in the world. We manage by surplus. So our administration, three in a row, says what matters is a $2 billion surplus, and we work backwards. And if you're not contributing to the surplus, you're forced to contribute to it. Money is taken out of your budget and moved over there. Now, in many cases here, some money has been moved back in. But specifically, they have refused to cooperate on prevention, which is critical. So some kids are identified or families are identified as in trouble but not yet in crisis. Mrs. Bonaventura wanted to help with that problem. She was fought off. She was barred from really dealing directly with the governor. And the reason is the fiscal people in the administration want a surplus. That's job one, okay? And until we realize that that's not job one, but our children are job one, we've got a problem. And until the legislature realizes that we have a responsibility, instead of watching this, which has been going on at least since 2005, we have some other responsibility, which is to do something. And we ought to have hearings on it and then decide what to do. We've got all kinds of people in jail. We're turning our sheriffs, because of the opioid crisis, we're turning them into drug counselors,
yep,
treatment centers. They're not prepared for it. We don't have adequate facilities for these adults that we're going to try to treat. We have an industry that's in some cases too aggressive in what they charge for this treatment. So this is an unusual problem. I left the governor's speech and I wrote down in my notes, I wrote two things. No money, no challenge. That was his speech. Don't ask for a penny because the surplus must be preserved, and don't challenge the people of Indiana or, God forbid, the legislature. We need to change that attitude.
Judge Morse, you are right on the front line with this. What changes would you make to improve this if you had the authority?
I would, first of all, DCS needs a new practice model. The current practice model that they have is very pyramidic, and it doesn't allow for continuity of cases. We lose 3 to 6 months of toward permanency of a child every time there's a case manager change, and it is not unusual to have 5 case managers on a case. We don't pay them appropriately. We don't recognize the stress that every decision that they are involved with, the downside risk is a child's life. And it needs to be esteemed and valued in such a way that it's appropriately compensated. Secondly, somebody needs to blow up the bureaucracy. A lot of that comes to them from the federal government because almost a third of DCS's budget is reimbursed through Title IV-E reimbursements from the federal government. They have a million caveats, requirements, forms, checklists, and case managers are buried in paper instead of being able to do the casework. Anytime cases stay open longer, the cost is greater. We need someone using a bully pulpit to recruit foster parents. I didn't hear the governor ask for families to open their hearts and their homes to children, and we need that. Because so many more of these cases are ending in termination, because the parents can't stay sober long enough to be reunited with their children. We have situations where then the foster parents or adopt the children, which is wonderful, except frequently then we lose them as foster parents. The licensing process through DCS is like walking through waist-deep mud. It takes forever, and I'm sure Sharon Pierce will support me in that.
Yeah, we are going to talk with Sharon Pierce. I'm trying to maximize the time we have.
I understand.
With the two of you, she's got. Yeah, I'm going to. I'm going to let Representative Delaney, I'm going to ask you one more question, and I'll let you both go. What are the chances, given that you are in a decided minority in the House, that you're going to be able to push this issue? I mean, Judge Moore has obviously made a reference to someone's got to use the bully pulpit. It sounds like that's what you're trying to do. What do you think your chances of success
are? Well, I'm going to be as much of a bully pulpit person as I can be, but I'm limited by my position. But let me tell you something very specific. I drafted a bill to make a substantial increase in pay for the DCS caseworkers who go to people's homes into the courts. They get paid $34,000 to start. They have to have a college degree, and they probably have student loans. So I said, let's just do that. I gave my proposed bill to the governor's office and to the leadership of the majority. The majority was kind enough to tell me they won't hear the bill. The governor's office didn't react. So I'm going to keep making proposals. They're going to probably keep ignoring them because they don't like this topic, John, but they need to talk about it.
Well, I'm going to say then, how do you force that conversation?
You force it by what we're doing here, by just talking about it. The public has to get involved, and the public is a big public. We got to get the sheriffs, the prosecutors, the parents who are in stress. We got to get the doctors who understand this situation. We got to get the juvenile court judges. We got to get talking. I mean, the legislature works for the public, not for the governor. That seems to be a misunderstanding.
Well, I think that will have to be the last word for this particular segment.
I appreciate it.
Thank you, Representative Ed Delaney. Right. Judge Marilyn Morris, thank you very much for making time. I know you're both very, very busy.
Thank you so very much.
I appreciate you taking part in the conversation.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. We are going to take a break right now. We are talking about the Department of Child Services here on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or find us on social media. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about the controversy regarding Indiana's Department of Child Services. Late last year, the former director, Mary Beth Bonaventura, sent a letter to the governor resigning, but in it she said that because of certain flaws in the way that the department was operating, that Indiana children likely would die. She cited specifically that the chain of command had been confused with the appointment by the governor's office of a chief of staff who undermined the director's authority, that much of the infrastructure was broken, relationships with providers that had sustained the agency over the years were being damaged, and other management issues. In our previous segment, we talked with juvenile court judge Marilyn Moores, Indiana Senator Tim Lannon, Democrat from Anderson, Indiana Senator Travis Holden, a Republican from Markland, Indiana Representative Ed Delaney, a Democrat from Indianapolis. They all had to head back to legislative business. We are fortunate to have with us now someone who is working on the front lines here, Sharon Pierce. She is the president and CEO of the Villages and also obviously spent some time in state government working on these very issues. What did you think, Sharon, about what you heard in that first half hour of conversation?
Really a lot of affirmation, John. Child welfare is probably the most complex responsibility that any state government or the federal government has. Children, you acknowledge, don't have a voice and don't have a vote. And so those of us whose life work is investing, particularly in our most vulnerable children, are very passionate. And I think you could hear the passion from each of our legislators and certainly from Judge Marilyn Moores. I have deep respect for all of them. I have worked with former Director Bonaventura for 30 years almost. You know, she's been a 36-year servant, if you will, to Indiana's most vulnerable children. But it is hard to sort out what are the best solutions. I think Judge Moores made a great point in that when you're comparing the number of children in the child welfare system in Indiana to other states, we absolutely are not comparing apples to apples. It's apples to oranges and pears and bananas. For example, in in Illinois, they don't automatically take custody of children who are born addicted to a drug substance, as we do in Indiana. They have an extensive, what we call subsidized guardianship program, where grandparents are subsidized, supported for raising their grandchildren, a heroic commitment, a program that we are very passionate about at the Villages and have one of those. Ohio is still a county-administered child welfare system. So the dynamics are very different. And I think I have before me here a graph of the growth of the number of CHINs in the state of Indiana. And we have more than doubled.
I should say, for those who don't speak in that, it's
children in need of services.
Yeah,
thank
those
you,
of
thank
us
you.
Who live in that world know what you're saying, but not everyone does.
But the number of children in need of services in Indiana has more than doubled in just about 6 years. So when Judge Moores talks about that tsunami, I shared that in one of the interviews I did with the Indianapolis Star as well, that to me, this is our natural disaster in Indiana. This is our tsunami, our hurricane, our tornado. And as we watched New Orleans or Houston or Florida pull out all the stops to respond to and protect from future natural disasters, that's exactly what I hope and pray we'll do here in Indiana for these children.
What would your observation, what changes do you think? The question that I asked Judge Moores about, obviously, it sounds like with something this large, it's going to take a large-scale response, and by definition, those can take some time. What do we do for triage right now? Because there are kids who are at risk at even as we are talking right now.
Absolutely. I'm sure we are getting a call at this moment for, a foster family that could care for three or four siblings whose parents are unable to care for them. So I think certainly we can't anticipate a single silver bullet, if you will, strategy. It has to be a multi-pronged approach. Acknowledging the challenges of our family case managers within the Department of Child Services is critical, and looking at, the training and the salary that they provide. But one of my passions is helping the public understand the critical relationship between the public and private sector. And, if you remember Eleanor Ostrom, who won a Nobel Prize here in Indiana, focused on how do we best solve complex social problems. And her research showed that it wasn't in the public sector and it wasn't in the private sector. It was when the two sectors work closely together. And I think that's often a piece that's lost in this dialogue. We talk often about Department of Child Services and case managers, but the Villages has 300 employees that are out there day in and day out, night in and night out, as do all of the other licensed agencies throughout our state. We're the organizations in the private sector, primarily nonprofits, caring for these children. So it's important that we're a part of that dialogue. I think, too, understanding that recently, within the last 3 years, there was a national commission that was enacted from our national legislators on Capitol Hill called the National Commission to Prevent Child Fatalities. A gentleman named David Sanders, the CEO of KC Family Programs, headed that. And what he learned was that the best way we can protect child fatalities in 0 to 5 year olds is to answer that hotline call. I was privileged to be at a national meeting with Director Bonaventura when he announced the results of this report, and she took that to heart and came back to Indiana. 57% of the children in Indiana's child welfare system coming in, and primarily as a result of the opioid and drug crisis, are 0 to 5 years of age. So that in and of itself explains a prevention strategy, if you will, based on data. And I, for one, am proud to be a part of a state and a part of a system that's prioritizing protecting children, from harm. So I'll take a breath there because I'm sure you have another question.
And actually, I want to say to our production crew, we'll take our next break at 1:45 if that's okay. I want to try to get a call in right now. We are talking about the crisis in the Indiana Department of Child Service. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. Track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Or you can do what Margaret has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Margaret, you're on the air.
Hello. My question involves basically contraception. I cuddle these babies at the hospitals when they're newborns, and so many of them are addicted, and they twitch, and they're miserable. They have hiccups. They're fussy. They're just so miserable. And I don't think the mothers mean to have one baby after another. I think they're out there and they're desperate. But my understanding is that there's a patch that's good for 3 years or 5 years. Can't we make these easily available, practically hang them from the trees to help these moms? I guess that's it.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Sharon.
You know, and certainly I've heard Judge Moores talk about this as well. She personally begs any women out there who are using drugs to do all they can to prevent a pregnancy from occurring, knowing the risk to that child. So that is, you know, certainly a health strategy that, as Representative Delaney was emphasizing, we need a very broad cross-discipline conversation, and that would be one that would be exciting to have with our healthcare partners, so that, again, if there's a prevention strategy that we can use, then that's going to protect children.
How much of this is also that, that you know, I asked the question of Representative Delaney about disenfranchisement and about the fact that these are people without power in a lot of ways. Children are without power, but their families as well. How much of it is also the problem that they're... they're not really plugged into what we consider the modern information grid, too. I mean, they're often on the other side of the digital divide, so a lot of the ways we communicate right now don't work with them. So messages like that, while they may be worthwhile, don't even reach them.
And, you know, one of the things I think we can be really proud of in Indiana is we do have a prevention program in home visitation called Healthy Families America. Healthy Families Indiana is a service that's offered in all 92 counties. Nurse Family Partnerships and Parents as Teachers are similar programs where we're going into families on a voluntary basis to help them be the best possible parent they can be. So, and I know we're one of the larger providers of the Healthy Families Indiana program. Our staff work diligently to help cross that bridge, if you will, to digital information and resources. And we always, Prevent Child Abuse Indiana is a part of the Villages. We have a 1-800-CHILDREN number, 1-800-CHILDREN. And we partner with 211 to be available for parents for information. So that's another way that all of us can share with the parents in our neighborhood, our faith community, our school settings. If you have a question about where's the closest food pantry or how you can get some health care questions answered, calling 211 or 1-800-CHILDREN will help you as a parent. And so I think, again, those of us who are on the front lines of early intervention or prevention are doing a lot of that work. But certainly there's more, you know, we can use those great billboards on the sides of buses and, you know, billboards in our rural areas to help spread the word of good resources that are out there for our more vulnerable families.
All three of the legislators, well, two of them, Senator Holdman and Senator Lannon, said that this problem's been around for quite a while. In an earlier incarnation, you worked in the Biden administration you were the head of the it would not have been the Department of Child Services, but
Division of Family and Children. That has had several iterations.
So,
yes.
Is that true? I mean, has this been a troubled agency or service part of state government for as long as they say?
You know, my sense is it's not so much a troubled agency. It's the troubling challenges that children and families face that create that. We used to have one of our staff members had a cartoon on his cubicle that said, and it had a gentleman hanging by a noose and said, "This guy removed a child from their family." And then there was a noose with another gentleman hanging that said, "This guy didn't." And so it's difficult. You know, there are those who have very different attitudes about how much government should be involved in family life. That's a part of it. And then the fact, as you've said, John, that children don't have a voice. So, again, I think coming together as a community and really realizing our children are the only future Indiana has, it's well worth our investment. The return couldn't be greater.
What... do you, obviously, you're still in contact with these folks. I know people who work in the Department of Child Services.
Great folks, dedicated
they
folks.
They are, but they also, say right now they're feeling pretty battered down and beat down. What do we do about that in the short term?
You know, I think, and really our senators and Representative Delaney emphasized, as does Judge Moores, how hard and how important that work is. And I think that's a message that needs to continue to be shared at the villages. We're certainly emphasizing that opportunity to stand in the gap and be a foster or adoptive parent. That's one way they can step up. Or if you can't be a foster adoptive parent, support one. Provide diapers for the foster parent that's supporting and caring for that infant that's there because their parent is trying to combat the disease of addiction, if you will. There are ways other than the direct hands-on care that our communities can get engaged.
We are talking about Indiana's Department of Child Services. Right now we're talking with Sharon Pierce, who is president and CEO of The Villages, also has worked in state government dealing with these issues. If you would like to join this important conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Krall. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about the controversy in Indiana's Department of Child Services in the wake of former Director Mary Beth Bonaventura's resignation. When she resigned, she sent a letter citing various management issues she said were putting Indiana children at risk, even of death. My guest right now is Sharon Pierce, president and CEO of The Villages. Previously, we had talked with Indiana lawmakers Tim Lannon, Travis Holdman, and Ed Delaney, and juvenile court judge Marilyn Moores. We've got a lot of calls and all of that locked up right now, and we've got relatively little time to go. So I'm going to ask our callers, if possible, to be as brief as they can in presenting the question so as many people get a chance to weigh in on this question as possible. Again, the number, if you want to join the conversation, as Sean has done, is 866-476-3881. Sean, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My wife just quit working with a private organization that works with DCS offering home-based services to reunite children with their parents. And the reason why she quit is she couldn't stand working for the company because they kind of treated their clients as billable hours of opportunities to just build a state and not do the best things or offer full services to their clients and just taking on more and more clients without providing the quality work to their clients. And I was wondering if this is a known issue and if this is something being looked into, the private sector just kind of taking advantage of the state and not essentially doing their part to provide the best services for clients.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Sean. Sharon, I'll throw that one to you.
You know, and I'm sorry, Sean, that your wife has had that experience because obviously she has a heart for children and families. I'm hoping and think that that's the exception rather than the rule. I can speak for the villages in that we are nationally accredited. 2% of organizations nationally, really stretch because we're committed to quality and want to exceed state licensing standards. So I would hope she'd redirect that heart to, another organization that continues to do home-based services. Those are very critical, and that is one of the areas that we seem to really need to grow our capacity so that we can offer more support for these parents that really do want to be the best possible parent they can be, simply don't have the support or the coaching, if you will. They didn't have the role modeling to be the parent that we want them to.
Chuck, thank you for calling.
Oh, hi. Didn't know you could be that quickly. Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment more than anything else. I was with DCS for 23 years. I retired about a year and a half ago. The biggest problem I've always seen with the agency was always caseworker turnover. I mean, it's up to about 30% by some of my friends who are still there. And, I have a lot of bones to pick with the previous director in regards to how they handled the process of the caseloads going up, particularly the idea that the caseload sizes were determined by number of cases, not number of children. And I don't know. It's a tough job. I survived it for as long as I did. A lot of people didn't. Caseworker turnover size, it's always been an issue. It's always been a problem. And when I first started back in 93, it was kind of an up and flow type of thing where, you know, people would come and, you know, they would hire people, then people would leave and they would hire people. When DCS got started and Judge Payne was our director before Bella Ventura, they started a continually hiring, which helped a little bit. But like Judge Moores was saying, I've been in front of Judge Moores lots of times. The opioid contract just kind of blew it all up. We need to look at what a case manager does. If you've ever read the job description of what a case manager has to do, it's long. It's several pages of what a case manager has to do. And one person can't do it. And I guess that's what I wanted to say.
All right. Thank you very much for calling and sharing that, Chuck. So, Sharon, are we asking too much of these people?
We are asking a lot of them. I think one of the things that I know the director, Dr. Bonaventura, was working diligently on was creating a stronger sense of team, because I think even national research on any role or position says that people don't necessarily leave because of salary. They leave because of supervision. So she was really trying to strengthen that supervisory support. And even here in Marion County, where 25% of those children in the child welfare system are actually in Marion County alone, she was creating and has created three, I believe, separate local community-based offices of the Marion County Department of Child Services to move towards creating that sense of team so that workers felt more supported. Chuck is right. There's national data to show that turnover impacts the outcomes for children. And, you know, that's one of the things that we work on diligently in the private sector as well, retaining our staff for the sake of the outcomes of those children that we're so privileged to serve.
We are talking about the controversy in Indiana's Department of Child Services. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Sasha has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Sasha, you're on the air.
Hi. Yes, my name is Sasha, and my fiance and I are actually going through parenting classes, foster parenting classes, starting in February, which we are super excited about. We do not have any children. And the conversation has come up a lot between us is what are the ages that we are willing to foster? And I am kind of locked in right now on the school age, you know, 6, 7, 8 years old, because we don't have any children. We want young children, and I would love to have an infant. And I would gladly take on an infant right now if I could. But financially, the per diem would be consumed 100% by child care, because I did used to work for kinder care where I was a supervisor, and it's about $1,000 for an infant in these programs. So I guess my question is, what can the state do to help raise the per diem for infants so that we can get homes for the infants? Because again, you know, I would have to pay for diapers and formula and clothes. And I am so new to all of this that, and it's not about making a profit. That's not what I'm saying at all, but helping care for the child the best ability, you know, that we can. And we both have jobs, and so childcare would be a necessity.
Thanks very much for the call and for raising that issue, Sasha. Sharon, I'll reframe it ever so slightly here. I mean, because that is a fine line. Obviously, we don't want people getting rich off of this system, but it's a disincentive if they know they're plunging themselves deeply into debt or assuming burdens that they can't possibly carry in the process. How do we go about figuring out whether we have hit that golden mean appropriately.
And Sasha has hit the nail on the head. That's something that our organization, the Villages, has worked diligently towards. And because the state doesn't have the resources right now through the per diem to foster parents to reimburse for child care, we have done grant writing and fundraising to help support our foster parents. Because you're exactly right, Sasha. You can't be expected to compromise the financial stability for your future children as you invest your time and your talent and your treasure in caring for Indiana's most vulnerable children. So kudos to you and your fiance, and I hope that you're as excited, you know, throughout the process. But I can share with you that's an advocacy area that all of us in the private sector are working with DCS on. And the reality is many of those child care dollars could be reimbursable by the federal government, that Title IV-E funding stream that Judge Moore has talked about. So that is a high priority for all of us who are immersed in foster care and adoption services, is to get that per diem for foster parents, particularly for very young children, increased.
We're talking about Indiana's Department of Child Services here on No Limits. Doug, you're on the air.
Thank you, John. So, I just wanted to address a statement that Sharon made earlier, that no one speaks for the child. And I'd like to make your listeners aware of the CASA organizations. The CASA acronym stands for Court-Appointed Special Advocate, and the motto of those organizations is, we speak for the child. Court-appointed special advocates are appointed to each child by the courts, and they intervene or interact with the DCS and the courts and various other agencies that are helping these children, and they do, in fact, speak for the child and act as the judge's eyes and ears. It's a great way for people to volunteer and get involved if they can't be foster parents. And Sharon was suggesting, you know, another way. This is another way.
To be fair to Sharon and I think to the others, I was the one who framed that, so I probably ought to take the hit on that one, Doug. And my point, at least initially, was more our political system is set up because they don't vote. They can't lobby legislators effectively, for example, and move themselves up on the priority list there. But so I wanted to make that clear. I don't think Sharon responded to my question. But thank you very much for the call and for making that point and that resource available.
Absolutely. I think, Doug, you've said it well, that one of the things as we, you know, run down on our time here is that how can each of us stand in the gap on behalf of these children and provide that voice? Certainly being a CASA is one way. Being involved, as Sasha and her fiance are going to do, in looking at is foster parenting or even special needs adoption right for me? But finding out those in your community who are foster and adoptive parents and helping to support them, perhaps providing them through your book club or your Bible study with diapers for the next month or so. There are great opportunities for all of us. And then certainly reaching out to our own legislators to let them know that we believe there's no greater investment than our children.
I'd like to thank my guests, Sharon Pierce, Marilyn Moores, Tim Lannon, Travis Holdman, and Ed Delaney for what has been a lively conversation. Also like to thank our listeners for some great questions and comments. I am John Kroll. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.